Welcome to the Product Business Podcast. This is a place where I interview bootstrappers and entrepreneurs who are selling software products online. And the goal is to help you, whether you are thinking about maybe selling a product in the future, you are launching a product, or you're already generating lots of revenue. I am your host, Scott Bollinger. If you enjoy the podcast, please give us a rating or click the subscribe button. In this episode, I talk with Pippin about how he started his company, saw a lot of success, and then kind of just got burnt out and wanted to do something else. So considered his other options for what he could do, ended up bringing on some partners, setting up his business to run on its own without him, and then he started a brewery. So we talk about how the brewery is going and what lessons he's learned from that and what else is going on in his life. Today, I'm excited to have Pippin Williamson of Sand Hills Development with me. Pippin is the founder of Easy Digital Downloads. They also do Restrict Content Pro, Affiliate WP, Sugar Calendar. They acquired WP Simple Pay. They have something called Sellbird. And back in the day, Pippin had Pippin's Plugins as his site. And they're now doing a brewery. So I don't know. You have a lot of stuff going on.
We find a way to keep ourselves busy.
Nice. So Pippin, I've known Pippin for a long time, and I've used Easy Digital Downloads for a long time. We had a mastermind group together at one point. I think a lot of people know, you know, who you are and everything. But for those who are not familiar, do you want to just give a quick rundown of like your journey with WordPress?
Sure. Yeah, certainly. So I started into WordPress around 2008-2009, originally just kind of building websites for anybody that would hire me, and a lot of basically freelance development. And then I did that for a couple of years and then transitioned from that into building WordPress plugins, really through the client site development. I was building sites for clients that then needed some extra features or specific functionality, and I would build it as a plugin. And then I kind of accidentally got into building commercial plugins that I then sold. And that ended up going really well. And so I kind of transitioned from doing client development into doing product development, building plugins and selling them. Still all just solo by myself. And I did that for a couple of years, and it grew and really kind of just took off really well for me, which ended up leading into beginning to build a team around it. And so I hired a support person or two. And at that time, I was building this brand kind of known as Pippin's Plugins. It was me building plugins, writing about it. I had a very active blog, lots of tutorials and videos, a lot of podcasts and things like that, just basically talking about what I was building and my journey in building WordPress stuff. That kind of transitioned into founding a company that is now called Sand Hills Development. And Sand Hills Development is basically the parent company of a bunch of different products, the ones that you mentioned: Easy Digital Downloads, Affiliate WP, Restricted Content Pro, WP Simple Pay, Sugar Calendar, and something that we haven't launched yet but are still building called Sellbird. So those were products that early on I built solo, and then they did well enough that ended up building a full team around them. Most of those. Affiliate WP was never a solo project. That one always had a team around it. But eventually, I basically just started hiring people to help with support, help with development, eventually help with marketing. And now we have, we're a 24-person company. We're all distributed. We operate around the world in 7 different countries and sort of different continents. And we also, as you mentioned, we also operate a brewery, which is totally different than WordPress, but was something that I was kind of a passion project for me that I really wanted to get into. And all of the WordPress development is basically how we were able to do it. It was what made it possible. So now we operate the software side of the company, and we also operate the beer side and a little bit of physical real estate as well.
So it's really interesting what you're doing now. I have a few questions for you about that, because I've kind of watched your journey for a long time, and you know, it started out with just you, and then you ended up, you know, hiring Chris and some, you know, you partnered up with Andrew on Affiliate WP. So now you have partners who you've given equity mm-hmm. in the business to. And you like you acquired WP Simple Pay, you brought on Phil, and then you started this brewery. And one of the interesting things is, like, why did you end up putting the brewery under the Sandhills Dev umbrella when it is very clearly has nothing to do with software? And probably the people on your team, you know, I know Chris likes beer, but like really it has nothing to do with one another. So why didn't you just go start the brewery like with your brother or with a separate company?
So there was a couple of reasons for it. It's a really interesting question, especially because it's something that we thought about a lot. If you've ever, and for anybody that's listening, if you've ever gone through the process of trying to change legal entities or move a business from one to another, it's kind of complicated and can be really annoying. So it's best if you can try to get it right the first time so that you don't have to go through all that hassle. So we spent a lot of time thinking about it. And I would say there was really two major reasons why we put it under the same umbrella. One was simple financing. We were able to basically do what we did with the software company and we bootstrapped it. So we didn't take any outside investment. We didn't go for any bank loans. We built everything and paid for everything in cash, a little piece at a time. That was a lot easier to do when it was part of an established company where we could actually run some cash from the company into it, as opposed to coming up with personal financing or finding somebody else to give us a bunch of money to do it. So that was one reason. But the more important and the bigger reason is that now that Sandhills Development has more or less been in business for about 10 years, we started to really look more into the future of trying to figure out, okay, here's where we are at after 10 years of kind of starting this journey. What's 10 years from now look like? What's 20 years from now look like? What do we want to do? Where do we want to go? And one of the decisions that we made was that we don't necessarily know that we will still be building WordPress plugins in 10 years, but we do know that we have every intention of still being a company and being here. And so we're trying to be much more forward-looking in terms of diversifying the business. We kind of decided that it doesn't... We love WordPress, and we really, really love all of the stuff that we do and all of the people that we've gotten to know and the entire industry. But we kind of recognized a blunt truth is that it doesn't really matter what we do in a company, like what industry we work on. What matters is that we're able to continue to operate, and it matters who the people are that we work with. So the people that we work with today are the people that we would love to continue to work with for the next 10, 15, 20 years, as long as we can give everybody a place that they want to be. So we want to try to build a company and to build an organization that doesn't have a 1 or a 2 year turnover rate. We'd like to have a 20 year turnover rate. One of the ways that we are working to do that is by diversifying what we do as a company. So we're not just a software company. We are a company that is now a software company and a brewery, and we're starting to step into real estate. We want to find ways to give ourselves longevity as a company, and hopefully build a wonderful place for people to work. And you know, if somebody comes in and is a software developer or customer support, and then they really want to get into other areas of the business, let's say that we want to start ramping up the real estate side, we're giving them a window to go ahead and do that. That's not really where we are right now. I mean, right now, like, we have the software side, we have the brewery side. They're definitely different. They have different teams. The real only connection is the naming and the ownership of the two entities. But it's the first step in that kind of 20-year picture.
That's really interesting. You guys are like because of the GM of WordPress, you're like doing cars and microwaves. That's so interesting to me, because as someone who, you know, owns a business and has equity in it, to give up your equity is a pretty big deal. And so it's really cool to see you giving up equity to people that you want to work with so that they'll stick around. And then also being like, you know, I'm going to do this new thing. And you could have totally just gone off and done it on your own and got found out a different way to do funding. But you're like, I like working with these people and I'm just going to do it with them too. Your brewery is in Hutchinson, right?
Yes. And well, we actually have two of them, but yes, one of them is in Hutchinson.
Where's the other one?
In Mission, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City.
Okay. But they're both in Kansas, and like most of your team is not in Kansas, obviously.
Correct.
Right?
We have two other team members besides myself that are in Kansas.
Okay. So they're not, but like, you know, right now, basically the brewery is a separate thing, and you got like, it's like even if somebody wanted to be involved in the brewery, like they don't live in Kansas, they can't really do much, right? So.
Yeah. The business of the brewery is fundamentally different than the software side. And the biggest difference, and this was, it wasn't an unknown to me when I stepped into it, but you know, you can anticipate something, but until you actually do it, you don't really know what it's going to be like. It was a culture shock, if you will, realizing the amount of freedoms that we have with online businesses and the ability to be anywhere. I mean, we've always said, you know, as long as we have an internet connection and a laptop, we can work from anywhere in the world. That does not work with the brewery, because we have a physical place. We have doors that have to be physically unlocked in order for customers to come in. We have to have somebody in the building in order to allow a customer to buy a beer. We have to have somebody that receives shipments. We have to have somebody that actually brews all the beer. And there's a lot of basically everything is literally hands-on, which is wonderful. But it was definitely a bit of a shock. Not a shock, because I mean, I knew all of that. I anticipated it. But until you're actually doing something, you tend to take a lot for granted.
Was there anything weird, like where you, the liquor laws, were you like, because Sandhills Dev and is Sandhills Brewing, was it like, hey, because of these liquor laws, like this guy you're employing, like can't work for you anymore or something weird like that?
No.
Okay.
No. So, there was a little bit of weirdness where, there are very specific laws about who can and cannot own a brewery. Mm. And so when we went through all of the licensing process, which was pretty intense, we had to submit personal information on all of our shareholders. And basically, if you own X percentage, you have to be a resident of Kansas. If you own under that, they just have to have all of their information available. Then they have a bunch of other requirements in there, like you cannot be a felon, you can't be a non-US citizen, you have to be at least 21 years of age, you et cetera, et cetera. And they also have to collect all that information on any spouses and
Oh, wow.
So, but there's some of that stuff.
Andrew's in New Zealand, right? So was that weird? Did that cause any problems?
At first we didn't know what in the world to do with that. Turns out the state of Kansas also didn't know what to do with it, so it ended up being totally fine.
Okay. They're just like, we're just going to let it slide.
pretty much.
Nice. So how's the business? Are you guys like profitable with the brewery?
Yes, we are profitable. Our profit margins are way slimmer, that's for sure. But one of the things that we did, mentioned this a little bit earlier, is we bootstrapped the whole thing. So we walked into this knowing that, first of all, it's important to know that the market that we opened up, Hutchinson, Kansas, is quite a few years behind any of your more hub cities, you know, anything like Denver, Chicago, or Kansas City, and even further behind any of your coastal areas, East or West Coast. So as a beer market for a brewery, it doesn't exist here. Did not exist at all. So we're stepping into a market where we have to build our customer base. It's very different than, say, if you were to open up in a place like Chicago where, or Kansas City or LA or San Diego, where you open and people will come in automatically. So knowing that, one of the things that we very intentionally, when we set out to build it, we basically set a requirement. And that was that we have to be able to close it down and walk away tomorrow if we want to or if we need to. And that's one of the big reasons why we said we're going to bootstrap it. We're going to pay for everything in cash. Because if we are beholden to a bank or a private investor for any amount, of any dollar amount, whether we're talking a few thousand or tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands, even or even millions, we can't walk away. We're stuck. So we said, okay, we'll build it slowly and we'll build it small and we'll pay for everything in cash. So we spent about 2 years basically slowly buying equipment, slowly building it out, and we built a very, very small brewery. But because we did that, we don't owe anybody any money. Which means that all we have to do to cash flow it, to be profitable, is pay for our cost of goods, and our labor. And then month to month, we are profitable. Sure, we have a certain amount of investment that the business spent in order to get it up and running, but that money doesn't have to be paid back. That was an initial investment to get it off the ground. We were profitable in terms of our monthly expenses at I think month number two.
Wow. So yeah, so you had that benefit of not having like interest on loans that you're paying back and like equipment that you're renting. Right. So you're paying monthly on that. So it's really easy to be profitable. That's interesting.
Yeah. And we made that decision too, that we would own every single piece of equipment that we had in the building. So there's a lot of businesses that are equipment heavy, if you will. And so in the brewing world, there's a lot of stainless steel. There's a lot of pumps and other big equipment, things like that. It's very common to lease or rent those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And we said, nope, we're going to own everything outright. That also means that if we decide to walk away tomorrow, we have a lot of equity that we can sell off. Right. We have a lot of equipment that is worth a lot of money. Stainless steel is very valuable. And we can sell it off if we have to or if we want to.
That's cool. So if you did not bootstrap the company, do you think, you know, if you were paying loans and rented equipment and things like that, do you still think you would be profitable?
If we had only our Hutchinson location, probably not. But with our Mission location, so basically what we ended up doing is building two taproom breweries. We built one in Hutchinson, we built one in Mission. So the Hutchinson beer market is one that we're building the market, which means that we have wonderful days and we have terrible days in terms of your customer traffic flow. The Mission market in Kansas City is very well established already and is much, much busier. So there wasn't nearly as much concern there, and it ended up proved to be the case. Our cash flow for the Kansas City side is 4x what our Hutchinson side is. So by having them both together, they basically even out. So there's some advantages that our Hutchinson brewery has, aka space and lower costs, especially when it comes to real estate. And then there's some advantages at our Kansas City side, which is mostly higher volume. And together, they even out really nicely. So even if we had some finance loans that we had to pay back, we would be okay with our Mission space. If we only had Hutchinson, it would be more challenging.
Hmm. So what are some business lessons you've learned coming from the internet space, the software space? Obviously having physical products and having to get a liquor license and buy equipment and having inventory is very different. So what are some interesting things that have happened or that you've learned?
So one of the first ones is logistics. So I mentioned earlier that I'd kind of taken for granted just how much freedom we have with internet businesses. So in terms of logistics, number one, we got to make sure that our ingredients are there. We don't have ingredients online. I mean, everything is infinite. I mean, unless we're sending out t-shirts or swag items or something like that, or you are a physical goods store. But as a software company, inventory does not exist except for as this abstract idea that we build as a feature set inside of our e-commerce systems. In the brewery, there's inventory. You also have to make sure that when a semi-truck pulls up and is ready to deliver you a pallet of goods, you got somebody to receive it. So scheduling who's in the building when is totally different and has been really, really... I think having to work around a schedule of these are the hours that we're open, these are the hours that we have somebody working in the building has actually made it a lot easier for me to build a disconnect or build a separation between work and non-work. Mm. Because now, like when I go to the brewery, which my main office is in the brewery building, and so I can spend some time in the office on the computers and working on the software side of things, and I can step over into the brewery and work over there very, very easily. But now when the brewery closes, like that part of the business it's literally closed. We walk away. Sure, there's always more to do. I mean, there's accounting reports to do or taxes to pay or orders that we can submit through email or promotions and things like that. But for all intents and purposes, the business is closed. And so that's been really fascinating. It's just learning how to actually shut that off. And I think that has helped me a lot in the digital side too. I've built a better turn off switch. Labor and let's say people cost are fundamentally different in a physical business versus the digital side of things. For example, everything that we do on the software side is skilled labor. I mean, whether you're doing customer support, marketing, development, or any other thing, everything is skilled labor. On the brewery side of things, not to say that anybody that works in the brewery side, in the production, actually making the beer, is skilled labor. But it's not necessarily a skilled labor working behind the bar, in the tap room, or helping with packaging. And so seeing the difference on the business side of what it costs to run a business is really fascinating.
So what do you mean by that? Like it costs less
basically payroll.
Right.
Payroll
differences. So like you can pay people like close to minimum wage where you can't really do that in software. Is that what you're saying? Or you just pay them less?
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, so we very intentionally set out to never pay minimum. Our base pay at the brewery is what we call a living wage. If you Google search living wage and like put in your zip code, you can find what your livable wage is. And it's basically the wage that somebody needs in order to work 40 hours a week and live with only one job and never need to have a second job. In the hospitality industry or just in general, the small business world of anybody that works retail or hospitality or anything like that, minimum wage or even less than minimum wage with tips is extremely common. And so most people have to have two or even sometimes three jobs in order to make ends meet. And we really don't like that. And we decided that it's really important to pay people a living wage, which is the wage that you need to be. This is the only job you need in order to live well. And so our costs, our payroll costs on the brewery are higher than a lot of similar businesses would be, but we decided that was worth it. Let's see, what else is very fascinating? Customer service is totally different in an in-person setting.
You don't have to hunt for bugs in the beer, right? Although if you have a bad batch, that's not good. There's a bug in the batch, then the whole batch is bad, right?
Yep. So customer service, for one, it's automatically all face-to-face. Like, we don't sell anything to somebody that we did not see face to face. So there's no unknown strangers. I mean, yes, you may not know this person that just came into your business and bought something from you, but it's not a nameless face. It's not just a faceless name. It's not an email interaction. It is a face-to-face interaction. You are seeing their expressions. You're seeing their nuances. And that's really fascinating and really, really cool, frankly. I think it makes customer service in some way a little simpler, because anybody that's worked in customer support online especially knows that text-based communication is really atrocious for conveying the minutiae in human expressions. But when everything is face-to-face, we get that automatically. We have had a couple of cases where, you know, somebody came in, maybe bought a 4-pack of cans and took it home, and then they weren't good either. They weren't carbonated. They lost a seal or something, and so we deal with those once in a while. But it is a fundamentally different interaction than dealing with a customer online. And maybe one of the big reasons is that this is like, okay, when we sell somebody a beer, this is something they come in to enjoy or share with their friends, either because they're happy or they're sad, or somewhere in between. But we are not dealing with people's businesses. On the software side of things, especially with the software that we make, almost every person that we interact with is, we're working with them in the, in a scenario where our software is helping their business, hopefully. And either it is providing all of the platform that their business operates on, their sales funnels, etc., or it's a small subset of it. But if our product doesn't perform the way that they want, it impacts their business. Now, when we sell somebody a beer and it ends up being subpar or just not to their liking, it's totally different, because they didn't enjoy the $5 or $10 product that they bought, but it didn't impact their livelihood or their employees' livelihoods. And so the interactions are totally different.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. So now that you're managing a brewery and you also have a team of about 24 people, what is your role now with Sand Hills? It seems to me like you've taken a step back and you have a little bit more of a quieter presence, or I don't know if you're focusing more on the brewery than on the software now. How do you manage your time, and like, what's your role now at Sand Hills? Or I should say at the other companies, the software companies.
At Sand Hills Development, yeah. Because they're technically both called Sand Hills, right, which can be confusing.
Right.
So it's changed a little bit, or maybe I should say a lot, in the last couple of years. So when we first started building the brewery about 2 years ago now, that was at a time where I was starting to really face some serious burnout on the software side, and I really needed to step away. At that time, I was really considering the possibility of just selling the company and walking away. I was tired of working online. I was tired of staring at a computer screen. All of those things that everybody faces burnout at some point, and I was no different. I burn out. So I kind of stepped into building and running the brewery full tilt. I basically took a 9-month hiatus from the software side of things. And I still communicated with the team. I made sure that everybody's needs were met. I ran payroll, but mostly my focus when it came to the development side of things was making sure that I got the right people in the right seats to allow me to step away, because I was not functioning well in my role as a developer and as the head of the company. So I basically spent 9 months using it as a way to ensure that we had everybody in the right seats. I've spent a lot of time working on what I call my bus factor. My bus factor is the, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, is everybody taken care of, basically? Does the company still run? Do we have everybody in the roles that they need to be in to make this thing still continue to exist and to operate well? And so that meant that I needed to remove myself from pretty much every day-to-day operational role. And building the brewery was a nice little excuse to help test that theory, because I basically took 9 months off. After we got the brewery up and running, I got reinvigorated basically about a year ago to get back into the software side of things. But I stepped into it in a different capacity. So I used to do everything, as pretty much all solo founders do. You do support, you do development, you do marketing, you do anything and everything that you need to do to help make this thing run and to build it. But since I had taken those 9 months to kind of test how everything ran mostly without me, I was able to step back into more of, I guess you could say more of a leadership role, in terms of, instead of working in, I'm working on the company. And so now for the last year, what I've mostly done is work on company administration, work on building out our longer term picture and what we look like as a company and how we operate, doing more with making sure that we have everybody in the right seat to make the company run without me, and really kind of embracing my role as the CEO of a company as opposed to the developer of a company. So now, for example, just recently, we introduced a new role. We brought on, or I shouldn't say brought on, we promoted one of our team members into head of operations, which was, I would say, so for the last year, most of what I did was administration. I coordinated teams, I coordinated payroll, I managed all the finances. I did everything of the day-to-day work to keep the company operating. And as of a month ago, I've offloaded almost all of that work onto one of our guys. And we gave him a role called the Director of Operations, which is basically anything to keep the company running day-to-day. Internal documentation, payroll, expense tracking, all of it.
And that's, I'm looking at your website now, so that's Kyle.
Yes, that's Kyle Maurer.
Nice.
And then he also, handling all of our travel arrangements, all of our meetup logistics, basically all of the logistics of running a digital company, that now falls to Kyle, which has then allowed me to step back again and try to focus on long-term objectives. It gave me a good opportunity this last year to spend a lot of time building out something that I've been wanting to build for a long time. Which is something that we're getting ready to launch into Affiliate WP, which is our new payout service. First time truly stepping into a SaaS, which we're pretty excited about.
Oh, cool.
And actually, it's not really a SaaS, but it is a SaaS. It's just not a subscription.
So this is a back-end service for payouts that's going to go along with Affiliate WP.
Yep, basically cool. giving site owners a way to pay their affiliates that doesn't involve PayPal. Let them get deposits, direct deposits into the affiliate bank accounts, and submit the payout from your own company bank account or your company credit card, removing the need for PayPal or other services completely. So we spent about a year building it. So it was this idea that I'd been really wanting to tackle for a while, but with basically the problem that I kept running into was that I was so involved in the day-to-day administration of the company, which was getting harder and harder as we were growing. Mm-hmm. We added 6 people this last year. So stepping out of the day-to-day admin gave me a lot more opportunity to actually focus on getting that kind of thing built out. Now, I didn't do any of the development work on it. I basically just worked very closely with one of our developers, Toon Musun, to build it. I I set up the scope for the project. I set up how it was going to work. I figured out all of the minutia of how do we make these systems interact, and here's what we need, and here's what we can't, here's what we can and can't do. Here's all the pricing for it. And it was cool to be able to dive back into that kind of role. Because that's what I started doing originally when all of our products were early on, is I had this thing I wanted to build and built it. So, that's kind of where my role is now. Figuring out what our big projects are and figuring out how to make those happen, and stepping away from the day-to-day bug fixes and day-to-day feature development, day-to-day customer support. I actually realize now that I am 100% a marketer now and not a developer, which is really weird. And not to say that I go out and like produce marketing material, a little bit, but so we just had our all hands meetup this last year. This is the third year that we've done it. We fly our entire team into one place, and we live and stay in a house together for a week, basically. And so this year we flew, we had two guys that weren't able to make it, but we flew 22 of our 24 people into a house, and we hung out for a week. And in every time prior to this, whether it was our all hands meetup or smaller meetups, I'm a developer. And so I go and I spend most of my time with my developer coworkers. This time I didn't do that at all. We separated out. So we had our marketing team meet, we had our support team meet, and we had our development team meet. And I spent the entire time with the marketing team, which was very strange at first, but it is also I've battled for the last couple of years with this, I've had a blog post draft forever that I've wanted to write and I've never have, which was basically losing my identity as a developer, coming to terms with the fact that I am not a programmer anymore. The fact is I don't write the code anymore, and I haven't written the code for several years, but for a while I really didn't know what that meant. Like, you know, I think everybody sometimes struggles with, especially people that are freelancers or build a company, especially work in tech, when a distant family member or relative or friend or total stranger says, "Hey, what do you do?" So how do you describe yourself? You try to come up, like, what is your elevator pitch to people? My elevator pitch was always, I'm a programmer. I write software.
Yeah.
And I realized like 2 years ago, I was lying to people when I said I write software, because I don't write software anymore. I do not. I can still do it. I can still write code. I still understand it. And I'm a little rustier for sure. But the reality is that I don't write code anymore. I'm not a developer. What am I? And so like I've battled with that for 2 years, trying to figure out, like, here's my little internal identity crisis. I mean, the reality is that I am the CEO of a two dozen person company, which is still a small team. But I'm not a developer. So what am I? And realizing that my role in the company is to work closely with the marketing team to work towards our longer term projects and objectives has given me a lot more clarity and understanding of what my role is.
That's funny. I was just listening to the Pressnomics podcast and they had Heaton Shaw on it, and he was saying every like developer who starts a company has to become a business person at some point, or you have to have a co-founder that's one, or you have to hire one. But like he was saying that he is now he just is a businessman, you know, and that's that's what makes the businesses go. That's what makes the things happen. Like writing code only gets you so far. So I think it makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I think any developer that starts a company, you ultimately have a couple of choices. You either become a business person, you give up ownership of the business and hand it off to somebody else who can be the business person, or you have a co-founder or founders to be the business people, and then you can stay on the tech side. So like I've seen some developer founders start out and like adopt a CTO role or something like that, where they can still be very much involved in the technology side of things, but they may not do all the day-to-day development, but they're still in charge of it, if you will. for me, I stepped out of the code. And so I don't, I actually did something that I've been debating doing for a long time and finally just decided to commit to it. I've kind of struggled with, since I still identify myself as a developer, I want to be in GitHub. I want to see all the GitHub activity. I want to review pull requests. I want to see all the code that's happening. But the reality is, because I don't actually do that anymore, it's a distraction. And it is a distraction away from the whatever I'm working on outside of development. And it is also a, maybe a, I don't know if disservice is the right word, but I think in order for you to do a job, for anybody to do a job well, you have to 100% embrace the role that you have. I have left all of my GitHub activity and notifications enabled because I didn't want to embrace a role that didn't involve me as a developer. I've always wanted to hold on to being a developer. Well, a couple days ago, I disabled all of my GitHub notifications. And so unless somebody like directly mentions me in a comment, I don't see it. I don't see the GitHub activity anymore because I needed to embrace my role as a non-developer, as the business leader, as Pippin the marketer instead of Pippin the developer. And that was really interesting, but it's also been immensely, it was like a huge weight just like went away. Because every morning, what my workflow for the last couple years has been, I get up in the morning, and then one of the first things I do is I go through and make sure, see if there's anything that happened overnight. Since we're distributed across four different continents, we have a lot of different time zones and things happen in the middle of the night that I don't see. And so I go and check and see what happened during the night. And one thing that I always involved is looking at all these GitHub notifications. And so I would go through and see all the different activity that's happened across all of our different projects. And I would get kind of sucked into those for a little bit. And I would be looking at them, but mostly I was skimming and just filling time. Wasn't actually typically participating in them or adding any value to these conversations. I was just being there because I didn't want to not be there. But it was consuming energy, and it was consuming my mental capacity to do other things, and it was draining. And so I turned them off last week, and for the last like 4 or 5 days, I've gotten up in the morning and it's like a blank slate. Because most of my, when I go in and like review what's happening, most of it was GitHub activity that I am not involved in anymore. And so like this morning, for example, I got on and like went through a few different things and I noticed that my focus was so much better this morning than it's been in probably almost years. Because I didn't have 75 little GitHub conversations to go through or look at. And the reality is that over the last 2 years, I haven't been needed in any of those conversations. Because we have a phenomenal team, that does everything remarkably well, and I'm not needed. I'm a distraction to them more than anything. So I needed to just step out and let them do their job fully. And, you know, if something serious breaks, I'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll be okay.
Yeah. Hey, I think I'm going to end it there. It sounds like you guys are set up great for the future. I'm excited to see where everything goes with Sandhills. Where can people find you, or is there anything you want to announce or tell people about before we go?
So two things. First of all, if you want to find us, learn about us as a company or any of our story or any of our products, go to sandhillsdev.com. As of a couple weeks ago, we finally have a fancy little site that is our home base for all of our products. So we just launched that a couple weeks ago, and we're really excited to actually have it done and have it out there. The other thing is, if you are interested or a customer or might be a user of AffiliateWP, watch the AffiliateWP blog at AffiliateWP.com for the next couple days, because we're getting ready to announce our new payout service. It's going into beta any day. And if that's something that interests you or you find valuable, check it out.
Very cool. Thanks so much, Pippin.
Thanks. Appreciate it.